Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in Brunswick, New Jersey. We're going to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. You know, there are a couple of different stories out there that I want to talk about that I've read about critics. One good and one bad.
One good critic or one bad critic?
Yeah, exactly. I read in the Philadelphia Inquirer where there's a lawsuit brought by the New Jersey wine growers against Anthony Giglio, who is a gentleman we know who was a restaurant reviewer at New Jersey Monthly Magazine for a long time.
You guys have heard Anthony on this show.
Yeah, he's been a guest on the show. Anyway, Anthony said something about in New Jersey Life Magazine. He said something. He wrote something about he did a piece on New Jersey wines, and it said, you know, most of it's plonk or something like that. I don't know exactly what he said. I don't want to get sued as well. Actually, you know what? I probably do.
Go ahead.
The article said that New Jersey wines basically weren't very good, which is true. I mean, everything's subjective, but that's
right.
My opinion.
In our opinions, we're not crazy about New Jersey wines.
And they're suing him.
And they have a way to go. And they should be challenging themselves, and people should be challenging New Jersey wineries.
But we know that you
can make good wine in this part of the country. We know that you can make wine in this part of the country because we've seen people in Long Island do it.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that you can make it here. Now, maybe you can and maybe you can't, but suing the restaurant critic who accurately calls your wine not very good, and let's look at this, by the way, and we're going to reach out and ask if one of them wants to come on the show and talk about this, but let's be honest about New Jersey wines. Yeah, I like supporting local products. Mm-hmm. You hear all the time how we like to support local products on
the
show, but when you sue a restaurant critic or a wine critic or any sort of a critic because they honestly give their opinion of something, you sue the movie critic if he doesn't like the movie, what does that do to freedom of the press?
Right.
And what does that do to you as a consumer if the critics are afraid to tell you when they don't like something? Yeah, okay. And if you think some critic's an idiot, then that critic's an idiot.
You okay, Francis?
Oh, I'm getting all hot on this one. Okay, now check this out. Let's come to Anthony Giglio's defense here for a moment. Robert Parker, has he ever rated a New Jersey wine above an 85? I don't know, but if he has, it isn't very many. I don't think he has. Wine Spectator, how many New Jersey wines have made the top 10 list of the Wine Spectator ever? No, I don't.
Top 100. You can say top 100.
Exactly. How many?
Zero.
You know, all the wine critics. Kevin Zarelli was interviewed, who was on this show, as well as one of the foremost, probably the foremost wine educator in the world, certainly in the English language.
He was interviewed in the Star Ledger just this week.
T.J. Fodoraro interviewed him, who's the wine columnist for the Star Ledger, which is the largest circulation daily paper in this very populous state of New Jersey. And the final question that T.J. asked him, because T.J., I've tasted through New Jersey wine. I've tasted hundreds, if not thousands, of New Jersey wines.
Mm-hmm.
TJ's invited me to taste with him when he does articles on them every year, and I think it's interesting and good to support them when we can. But I've tasted these wines, and they're not on the same level as California wines. They're not on the same level as Long Island wines. Anyway, so TJ interviews Kevin Zarelli, and in the end, TJ says, "So, do you think New Jersey has any great wines?" And Kevin says something like, maybe one day or something. And that's not really the exact
quote. It's got some potential.
You know, who knows? Anything could happen. Something like that. I don't remember exactly what he said. But he didn't say yes. Mm-hmm. He didn't say, yeah, there's a great wine in New Jersey. So, you know, I think that maybe we should grow up and not sue the critics, because I'm telling you, of all the New Jersey wines that I've had, are there any Jersey wines on my wine list? That's all I'm saying. I've got 1,000 bottles on my wine list sometimes.
And I'm going to say something else. I'm going to add to this a little bit. I haven't always liked everything the critics have said about my restaurant.
Right, right.
But I'm not suing a critic. A critic is entitled to their opinion. And sometimes I think the critics are incorrect.
Yeah, sure.
But and whether they're talking about my restaurant or another restaurant, there are times that I just patently disagree with the critics. But if you want your critics to maintain the appropriate distance away from what they're reviewing and to indeed give you a critical analysis of what they're seeing, you can't sue them if you don't agree with them.
I think you can go to Anthony. We're going to link you to Anthony Giglio's website. So if you want to send him a little email of support or whatever, I think this is I'm aghast at this, and especially when, look, I want New Jersey wineries to succeed. Mm-hmm. I think,
and so does Anthony. That's the funny
and
part.
And so does Anthony. And our job is to be here to let the public know when we find good.
We'll get Anthony on the show. We'll talk about this more in depth.
I bet he won't talk about it, but we'll see. But the idea of these lawsuits is not. They know they can't win. You can't sue a critic because mm-hmm. they say they don't like something. But it's to intimidate people. And you know what? We're here to help people not be intimidated. And so that when we think wines are great, that we can say it. And when we think wines are bad, we can say it. And you know, it's still just our opinion, but don't sue me because I don't like your wine.
You were going to say plonk again.
Plonk.
Because
we
love
plonk,
that word.
Plonk.
We love
plonk.
That word. Plonk.
New Jersey wine full of plonk.
It's my new favorite word, plonk.
Okay, here's another story about a critic. This is from the New York Post, dated January 16th, 2006. A nasty incident at the new Chinese restaurant Philippe the other night was either a misunderstanding or a case of a wine writer who seems drunk on his own power. The ruckus began when Forbes.com wine expert Nick Passmore arrived last Wednesday at the hot East 60th Street eatery. According to co-owner Stratus Morfigan, Passmore told the hostess, "I'm the food critic from Forbes and I have a reservation." That's really against protocol. Told that he and a female companion would have to wait 5 minutes, he replied, "Do you know who I am? I'm here to write a review for Forbes magazine, and I do not wait." Oh, my God. After he was seated, the host came over during the meal, and the host came over to check on him. The owner came over, and he replied, when asked, "How was everything?" "The food's great. However, I didn't like my treatment at the door." The owner was dumbfounded. "Food writers are supposed to come in unidentified," he said.
And it's okay to not like your food, your treatment at the door. But what a critic should do in that case is to be quiet, see what happens, so that he can tell you about his true experience and what it would be like
to be
you.
The good Christian.
Not what it's like to be him.
Right.
I don't care what it's like to be him.
Right,
I care what it's like to be me when I go out to a restaurant.
The great restaurant critics often go in disguise. Okay. According to the owner, Passmore growled when presented with a check, "I do not pay when reviewing a restaurant. If I pay this check, I will write an unfavorable review of Philippe."
Ouch. You can't say that.
No, you can, but sometimes it appears in the New York Post.
You can call New Jersey restaurant plonk, but you can't say if you make me pay.
You can't say you can't pay me
extort,
or I'll
call. You can't extort from the restaurant. Quit it.
Okay. In fact, however, here's to be fair, the other side. In fact, Philippe publicist Melanie Young confirmed that Passmore had been offered a free meal, but whatever happened there and why the restaurant gave him a bill, I don't know. The owner encountered, "My publicist knows that I don't comp meals. Why was he promised a meal?" Meanwhile, a spokesman for Forbes, while confirming that Passmore is a freelance wine writer for Forbes.com, said it was an error in judgment that he agreed to accept a comp meal. "We don't do that." So everything blew up on this guy.
I'm sorry. Whoops.
You know, yes, you do. Guess what, Mr. Forbes? Yes, you did. Passmore has been doing this before.
Here's the bad news.
Oh,
chances are this isn't the first time that this has happened at a New York eatery.
Oh, my.
I don't understand the unmitigated gall of some people who are just blinded by this power that they have to just think that they can run roughshod over people is ridiculous.
And the difference is, look, if you came in and you had a bad meal and you want to write about it, that's your right to say that. But if you come in and extort me and say, if you don't give me free stuff, I'm going to write bad about you, that is a whole different thing. So on this whole thing, we come out on the side of Anthony Giglio and we come out against Passmore. Boy, he's going to get fired, huh?
He's got to be in big trouble.
Oh, man.
I'm sure Forbes magazine is not appreciative.
Who would ever trust
particular
a review from him again? I wonder if he's doing the same thing with wine.
I also realized that this was in the New York Post. So
yeah, you never know.
There may be.
Maybe we should call up Passmore and see if we can get his side of it. All right, you're listening to The Restaurant Guys. We're going to be talking to the coffee buyer from Dunkin' Donuts for the rest of the show, one of the largest, and it's the largest retailer of coffee by the cup in the world, and we'll be talking with her in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Mark and Francis, The Restaurant Guys. Our guest today is Ellen Rogers. She is the chief executive of Coffee Creations at Dunkin' Donuts, the world's largest retailer of coffee by the cup. She is a certified international coffee expert in coffee tasting and analysis. And, you know, Dunkin' Donuts sells more than 2.8 billion cups of coffee each year, and Ellen spends several months traveling Central and South America, tasting up to 600 cups of coffee a day. Ellen, that must be quite a buzz. I imagine your house is very clean.
Ellen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
600 cups of coffee a day is a lot. Doesn't it all start to taste the same after a while?
No, you're not drinking all that coffee. That's why we call it coffee cupping versus tasting coffee.
Uh-huh.
Why don't you tell us what coffee cupping is?
Sure.
Francis and I do some coffee tasting, so
okay.
We know what you're talking about, but they may not.
Okay. Well, basically, when you're cupping coffee, what you're doing is you're making sure that the coffee that you're buying is the coffee that you want to sell.
Uh-huh.
So what that means for us is we look at every coffee bean separately. Our original blend is made up of just that, a blend of coffee. So we would take each different origin of coffee, so whether it came from Colombia, for instance, or Peru, we would roast that up, grind it, put it in a cup. And first what we do is we smell it. So we sit around this big table that's like a big Lazy Susan.
Uh-huh.
And the reason why we do that is because it's a lot easier to spin the cups than it is to spin our bodies around the table.
Uh-huh.
And what we do is we roast the coffee, and then we'll grind it and put it in these cups. We'll smell it first for its fragrance.
Uh-huh.
And we'll record our notes on the piece of paper. If we found something off in it, if we thought that it was right on the money, we would note that down.
The same types of things we do when we're tasting wine.
Very similar. A lot of analogies between cupping coffee and tasting wine. After that, you actually add hot water to it. So, in essence, you are brewing the coffee, but it's more like a French press type brewing where you would put hot water on top of the ground coffee.
Mm-hmm.
The coffee will then rise to the top of the cup because there's gases underneath that coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So you would let that steep. We let it steep for about 2 to 3 minutes, depending on how many cups we actually have on the table at a time. And then we do what's called breaking the crust. You'll actually take a spoon and you push back the coffee grounds that have risen to the top of the cup, and you take a whiff in. And what you're doing there is you're looking for the aroma of the coffee. Again, this is going to give you your first indication that the coffee is either going to be something you're looking for or might have some sort of taint or fault in it. After that, what we do is we actually sip the coffee. And what we say is we usually slurp, sip, and spit.
Very much like wine tasting.
Yeah. Different from wine tasting, I guess, when you spit it out. We spit into these big spittoons that the reason why is because you don't want to get all that caffeine. But, again, you want to have the clear palate to go on to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, because we're looking at all these coffees independently of each other, we're looking for different characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
Some are going to have more body. Some are going to have more acidity. We're looking for sweetness in some.
And you want them to have different characteristics.
Absolutely. That's part of the art and the science of making up original blend.
Uh-huh.
The way I usually define it is we've had original blend coffee at Dunkin' Donuts for over 50 years. And the challenge is to make that cup of coffee in our consumers' hands the same as it was 50 years ago.
Has there ever been a change? Has there ever been a time that the original blend went through a shift one way or the other in the 80s or anywhere? Or has it always been this? Have you tried for the exact same thing for 50 years?
How we talk about it internally is we're always striving for that same flavor profile.
Mm-hmm.
So how we get there has changed over the years, just depending on what happens to coffee in that particular year. So sometimes we do have to look and source different coffees from different countries that we might be able to use today. So that part will change, but at the end we're looking for a certain acidity, a certain sweetness, a certain body, an overall flavor of the Dunkin' Donuts original blend profile.
You know, that, and I hate to keep saying this is like wine tasting, but a winemaker will do exactly the same thing. Chateau Mouton Rothschild will look for some similarity from year to year to year.
And how he gets there may be different.
And how he gets there by blending Merlot in or Cabernet in or Cabernet Franc or Malbec may be different from year to year, but at the same time, he's looking for some kind of house style.
You know,
champagne growers do that even to a greater degree.
At the last show we did on coffee, we had a great food writer, a guy named Sam Gugino, on the show who did a fabulous piece on coffee for the Wine Spectator magazine, and then he came on the show to talk about it. And he was telling us that, and he's also a wine writer, that chemically, coffee is actually more complex than wine. Did you know that?
I have heard that. I'm not an expert wine taster, so I can't really speak to the wine side of it.
Well, I'll bet you'd be really good at it.
Yeah, I'm right.
Well, exactly. I do know we have a wine expo every year here in Boston that I love to attend just because it's a lot of fun, and I do get to taste a lot of different wines that I typically would taste. But, yeah, I've experienced that as probably my first-hand analogy between the two. But, Yeah, coffee is very complex. I've heard it has over 1,100 different characteristics that can be defined.
Yeah, I've heard that quoted, and that's a little higher than what you normally find in great wines. You know, I think it's very interesting that you've been with Dunkin' Donuts since the beginning of your career.
Pretty much, yep.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. Do you remember your first cup of coffee?
I do. Well, my very first, before I came to Dunkin' Donuts, was stealing a cup of coffee from my dad as a little kid.
Mm-hmm. And did you like it or did you not like it?
I did like it. I don't know if it was just the aroma or just wanted to do what Dad was doing, but it's interesting. He drank it black, and I drink my coffee black now.
I didn't like the way it tasted, but I loved the way it smelled.
I was a carriage pusher at a ShopRite, and it was cold outside, and that was the only thing that was free and hot. And so I began to like it very quickly. Hey, listen, we'll be back in just a moment. Our guest today is Ellen Rogers, who's the chief executive of Coffee Creations at Dunkin' Donuts, and we're talking about all things coffee. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25. You know, Mark and I are always saying that long-term good environmental policy and good economic policy are one and the same. And that's not just for the government. It's also for small business and homeowners just like you. To help us put our money where our mouth is, we called E2ECTA. E2ECTA uses a team of specialists to find practical ways for your business or home to conserve energy and even to generate green energy that the utility company then has to buy back from you. That generates a different kind of green for your bottom line. We've gone solar at our restaurants. We're now producing cheap, non-polluting electricity, and with the help of E2ECTA, we did it for very little money. The government programs available to get you set up are unbelievable. We're talking about grants here, not loans, but grants. E2ECTA will help you find the right programs for you, and they'll do the paperwork. You keep the profits. It's a no-brainer, people. For lower energy usage, more profits for yourself, call E2ECTA at 908-359-9300 or click on their link at restaurantguysradio.com. E2ECTA for total energy solutions. Everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis, a stage left in Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. And our guest today is Ellen Rogers. She is the chief executive of Coffee Creations at Dunkin' Donuts, the largest retailer of coffee by the cup in the world.
So, Ellen, you were talking a little bit about how you taste coffees for professionally, and you hearkened it to what we call the French press, where you put the grounds in the bottom, and then you press, and then the water on top, and then you press the grounds down. Now, that's my favorite way to have a cup of coffee. I love to drink fresh French pressed coffee. How do you drink your coffee? What's your preferred?
Percolated, dripped.
Preferred brewed method.
Oh, well, I would say I'm with you on the French press. It really depends on, you know, what my day looks like, to be quite honest. I'm fortunate to live close to the office, so I wait till I get to work every day because I know the coffee's going to be great here.
I would imagine.
But at home, it depends. If I'm having friends over, then I'll get out, you know, the coffee pot and brew up a pot at a time.
Mm-hmm. Drip?
I'll do drip. Uh-huh. For French press, I'll usually do for myself. The one thing I love about French press is that you can control every single variable, which... You know, you control how much time the water is in contact with the coffee, how much coffee you use, how much water you use, the temperature of the water, you know, all sorts of things that come up with the extract or the brewed coffee. As far as, you know, other types of brewers, typically I would use a typical drip brewer, but if I'm having a large crowd, I would make sure I put it in like a thermal server so it's off the heater.
I got a question for you. When I was a kid, my mom and dad would always have the electric percolator. Whatever happened to percolated coffee? That's really out of favor now.
Yeah, I think they're still out there.
Well,
but most of them are 40 years old.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll be honest with you. I still make the Irish coffee at Christmas time out of percolated coffee just for nostalgia's sake. But is percolated coffee really an inferior way to make coffee than dripping or pressing?
Well, coffee is so subjective, as you probably know with wine as well. Everybody likes something different. So a lot of it is, you know, as we were talking earlier about our memories growing up, a lot of it, I believe, is what people remember growing up and what they, you know, look forward to.
Yeah, but you have an opinion. Let's get it out of you.
My opinion is I would not use a percolator. To me, it overextracts the coffee.
Well, you know, you're probably right, but around Christmas time, if you should come over to my house, we'll have a glass with some whipped cream on top and Irish whiskey in it. It's just lovely.
Yeah, I would say, you know, there you go. But I would say make some up in advance and get some ear pots so you've got plenty of...
That's probably the best way to do it.
At my house, we put a little anisette and a little Zabaglione on top.
Oh, the Italians. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Our guest is Ellen Rogers. She's chief executive of Coffee Creations at Dunkin' Donuts. We'll be talking more with her after the news. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. We own Stage Left and Captain Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com. And now you can download our podcast on iTunes.
Our guest today is Ellen Rogers. She is chief executive of Coffee Creations at Dunkin' Donuts, the world's largest retailer of coffee by the cup. She is certified international coffee expert in coffee tasting and analysis. And Dunkin' Donuts, that she's responsible for, sells more than 2.8 billion cups of coffee each year. And Ellen spends a lot of her time traveling in South America, tasting up to 600 cups of coffee a day. Now, when we buy coffee and bring it home, how do we store coffee? How do we make a good cup of coffee? What are the things most people do wrong? I know my mom keeps it in the freezer. Is that a good idea or a bad idea?
It's a bad idea. My mom does, too, and every opportunity I get, I throw it out when I get over.
You find that 2-year-old coffee in the back of the freezer? And
why is the freezer bad? Why doesn't that do good things?
What I usually explain to people is coffee is going to pick up any flavors or aromas that are around it. So what I tell my mother is when you put it in the freezer, that's okay. But the problem is when you take it out and put it back in and take it out and put it back in. So if you want to take it out and use it up, that should be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I would say the best way to store coffee is in an airtight container in a dark environment. Kitchen cupboard is perfect. And I also recommend that people only buy enough coffee to get them through a week.
Yeah.
You know, maybe 10 days. I think that's another thing. People, you know, stock up on all these coffees and they don't realize that over time it's going to go stale.
Think about it like a loaf of bread.
Right. Exactly.
Well, and
a loaf of bread's a great analogy.
And it's even worse than a loaf of bread because a loaf of bread will actually, you'll know when that loaf of bread is stale. What will happen is the coffee will just get more and more bland as time goes by. It's not like
and
you can look at it and say.
Absolutely. It'll pick up the flavors of things around it, too, if it's not sealed tight. So
I'm thinking about a little black truffle coffee right now.
There you go.
You know, the other thing about when you store coffee in the refrigerator, that's probably even worse in the freezer because some people store it in the freezer and scoop it and make it right away. But going in and out of a refrigerator for some food products is not. In America, we want to refrigerate everything. But like oil, you don't store your oils in the refrigerator because what happens is as they go in and out of the refrigerator, you get condensation on the inside of the container, and that actually accelerates the process of the degradation, you know? So
absolutely. The same thing, you get condensation in the freezer as well as in the refrigerator. Mm-hmm. The race will probably be a little bit different, but I wouldn't recommend the refrigerator either.
Ellen, I know you're responsible for all the flavors of Dunkin' Donuts. I better not see black truffle coffee without a byline.
We want a royalty. All right, now, there's a separate thing. Now, Dunkin' Donuts has positioned itself in the market as sort of the everyday man's coffee. And and I've been drinking Dunkin' Donuts, you know, since I've been drinking coffee.
And I got to tell you, Ellen, as we get into this, I'm not a huge Dunkin' Donut fan, and I generally prefer to go to a smaller bakery. But there's no denying that Dunkin' Donuts coffee is awesome.
See, I even like the donuts. Yeah. But the chocolate frosted kills me.
Well, hey, listen, you put a donut in front of me, I'm eating it.
Okay? Yeah, exactly.
That's just the way it is.
Now the other thing, but what I like about it is, look, I go into a bunch of, say, unnamed competitors of yours, and while, you know, I like that coffee, it's different, but I like it.
Yep.
I'm really a small, medium, large kind of a guy. I will not say the word venti unless I'm in Italy and I want 20 of something. You know? If I'm in Italy and I'm ordering 20 coffees, I'll say venti. So, I mean, I like that, and I like that it's a no-nonsense approach, and I think that's great. But I have to ask about just a couple things that I think are interesting. Dunkin' Donuts has sort of studiously avoided, thus far anyway, going to paper cups or recycled material for cups. And the company's been criticized in the past for still using foam cups, which are pretty environmentally unsound. I mean, 2.8 billion foam cups a year.
By the way, our radio station is still using foam cups, too, if anybody out there at the station is listening.
So what is Dunkin' Donuts? Are you guys concerned about that at all? Are there any plans to mitigate that sort of environmental damage? Or what are you doing? I mean, is Starbucks making an inroad against you by doing that, or how do we deal with that?
Well, we always are looking at new packaging, and we actually are at the end of this month going to be launching something internally to look at some efforts as far as environmental concerns. But to be quite honest, we've done research with our consumers, and we've done a lot of research consumers because, as you may know, about 2 years ago we changed the lid of our foam cups, and we got a lot of feedback. And people don't like change; they really like our cups. And, you know, before we can do anything, we have to really understand what it's going to mean to our consumer.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's, That's
we're hoping that you change your mind on that, and what we're going to try and do to get you to change your mind on that
is to change the consumer's mind.
Is to talk to your consumers.
that's
our goal.
Because the coffee is really great, and I drink Dunkin' Donuts coffee. Mm-hmm. There's a Dunkin' Donuts right across from our restaurant, and it's funny, I'm in a 4-star restaurant across the street, right? But I stop and get a Dunkin' Donuts cup of coffee on the way in.
Hey, listen, it's 6 a.m. You're about to start that construction project.
Well, and our coffee's not made, and Dunkin' Donuts is right there, and I like the donuts, so I get a chocolate frosted. You're responsible for 5 pounds of me.
Oh, no.
It's okay. It's a happy 5 pounds. But, you know, 2.8 billion foam cups strung together would make two rings around the earth. That's a lot of foam.
Well, we do have paper cups. Our small sizes do come in paper cups, and as well as all of our latte beverages, they all come in paper cups.
That's great. Well, and I'll tell you something else that you can do as a consumer is if you buy one of those, you know, even those plastic cups that's reusable that you can use every day, that's
right.
What you can do individually.
That's right. And you guys will fill those cups for people, right?
Absolutely. We even have travel mugs that consumers can buy at the stores.
But just so you know, as a consumer out there, if you buy a foam cup of coffee every day, that's 22.7 pounds of waste per year. If you buy one recyclable cup and keep it in your car, you can stop and get your Dunkin' Donuts or whatever coffee and not do that. Now, let's go back to talking about coffee itself. There's been a move to flavored coffees.
Yep.
How does that come about?
Do you drink flavored coffees? That's my question. If your preference, are you drinking flavored coffees or not flavored coffees?
I think my flavored coffee might be like yours. I like the shot of amaretto in it. But as far as work goes, I do need to work on flavored coffees. Mm-hmm. And
people
you know,
love them. By the way, the coffee
they
coulada.
They do. They love them.
My staff comes in. I'm gonna thank you for one other thing. My staff comes in with grabbing a coffee coulada on the way, and there's just a little extra zip in their step for about 2 hours after
there
that.
There you go.
So
they've read all the studies about how caffeine is making them
smarter and faster.
And faster, and so we're all for that.
That's great. Yeah, we recently launched 9 flavors, and within that you could actually develop or customize your own flavor with up to 3 of any of those flavors in one cup. And the reason why we were doing that is because we wanted to add variety. For us, in our operations of our stores, it was very difficult to have 9 different pots of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to launch what we're calling internally as flavor shots, but they're 9 different flavors that can be added to a cup of coffee. And it's really the same flavoring that's added to the bean that's then ground and brewed. But instead, what we've done is we've developed it to be able to be added to the brewed coffee instead.
I honestly think that's a good idea. Then your coffee isn't sitting as long.
And exactly. That was like a side benefit on top of the variety was now the stores only have to brew, you know, regular and decaf. You can get all of our decafs in a flavored format as well. You can get all of our iced coffees in a flavored format as well. They can really focus on fresh grinding, fresh brewing. It's added a lot of benefits.
Ellen, I'm going to tell you, I'm still not buying your flavored coffee.
I'm a black coffee. I'm a black coffee kind of
guy.
But you know what? I'll often go to Dunkin' Donuts because I'll be traveling with someone who wants a culotta, and that's why we go to the same place. And I do really appreciate the fact that you don't make me say silly words like venti and grande, and I really mean small, medium, and large. Now, how about grinding coffee at home? Are there different kinds of grinders that make a difference, positive or negative?
Absolutely. There's typically 2 types of grinders on the market. One is considered a burr grinder, and the other would be a blade grinder. Burr grinders would be much better because you can separate or move the burrs closer together for a finer grind, or you move them further apart for a coarser grind, whereas in the blade, you're basically just grinding for a period of time. The longer you grind, the finer the coffee becomes.
And what does the blade do that's negative?
It could actually heat up the coffees. And if there's a lot of oil on the coffee beans, it's going to heat up the oils on the coffee. The blade grinder, a good analogy for that, is a blender.
Uh-huh.
It's, in essence, very similar to what a blender does. So on one hand, I suppose if you didn't have a grinder at home, you could use a blender to grind up some coffee, depending on the strength of your blender.
Right.
I wouldn't recommend that either, but I usually recommend that people chop nuts in their coffee blade grinder. So.
Right. Well, now, when you grind coffee, should you brew it right away? Or I've heard that you should let it degas and let it sit for a few minutes before you brew it. Was there any truth to that?
But not for too long.
There's some truth to that. Typically at from a home perspective, you don't really have to worry about degassing too much, but it really depends. If you're roasting at home, you know, and there are a few consumers out there that do that, mm-hmm. then it's probably a good idea to let it degas. But
I want to talk more with you about roasting coffee and this topic in just a moment. Our guest is Ellen Rogers. She's the chief executive of Coffee Creations at Dunkin' Donuts, and we're talking with her about all things coffee. And we'll be talking about grinding coffee at Dunkin' Donuts and grinding coffee at home in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of the Restaurant Guys radio show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to RestaurantGuysRadio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Shatta, Stage Left in Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And our guest today is Ellen Rogers. She is the chief executive of Coffee Creations at Dunkin' Donuts, and we're having a delightful conversation about coffee. And I've actually had a cup of coffee, so if I'm seeing a little more lilt in my conversation, that's why.
You are talking faster than you were earlier.
I am a little bit. I got all hopped up on the coffee on the way in. Now, we were talking about grinding coffee at home, or roasting coffee, and people roasting coffee at home and roasting coffee at Dunkin' Donuts. How long after coffee is roasted do you keep it? I mean, are there vintage coffees, or the coffee's different every year, but do people age coffee, or does it all need to be fresh?
It all needs to be fresh. It really will depend on how the coffee is then packaged after it's been roasted. So, again, if it's in a dark container that's airtight, it will last a lot longer. But oxygen and light are two enemies of coffee.
Huh. So that vintage 1966 coffee I should get rid of?
Yeah, it's probably not going to take
very good. That Columbia Suprema 66 should go?
But before it's roasted, the beans keep, right?
They do, but they have a shelf life as well. And it depends, again, on how they're kept. So the green coffee, as it's known, if it's in its skin, so similar to like a peanut, you know, that outer skin of a peanut.
Right.
For coffee, that's called pergamino or silver skin.
Uh-huh.
If it's stored in that, then it could hold its shelf life a little bit longer than coffee that's not. Also, you know, temperature, humidity, they're all become factors, too.
So that silver skin, that has to be taken off before you grind coffee?
Actually, when you're roasting, it'll come off as you're roasting.
Oh,
but that chaff, it's typically called chaff. You'll see it in the roast, but you'll also see a little bit on the coffee bean. Typically, if you look at a bean, and in the middle of the bean where there's a little bit of a light kind of flaky material, it's like a peanut skin.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm talking about.
Wow. All right, so what's the worst cup of coffee you ever had? What's the best cup of coffee you ever had?
The worst cup of coffee I've ever had, I hate to admit, but it was probably outside of cupping, because I've tasted some pretty bad cups of coffee that we've rejected because it didn't meet Dunkin' standards. But outside of that, just tasting a cup of coffee, I would say probably the worst cup is probably in one of the origin countries that I was in, and primarily because they export all the good stuff. And unfortunately for the consumption in-house, they tend to leave the not-so-good coffee behind.
I thought you were going to say something like I was going to say, like, my in-laws' house.
No, they usually have me make the coffee there.
Well, and how about the super high-end coffee, like Jamaican Blue Mountain coffees and these coffees that are $20 a pound? Are they worth it? Are they that special? Are they that interesting?
A lot of them are that interesting. $20 a pound, I'm not so sure about that. But and some of those...
Buying wholesale, too, so...
Yeah.
Exactly. The green price is typically different, but it does sell for a lot more money than what they would call the C market,
right.
You know, the average price for coffee that day. But, yeah, typically what they do, they're much cleaner, higher quality. They are sorted through for, you know, some of the bad flavors or bad defects that could be found just from growing and harvesting the coffee and processing it at the farm level.
Mm-hmm.
But typically, you know, they have a nice, the higher priced coffees have a better look to them. It's a nice big bean,
mm-hmm.
because for the whole bean consumer, that's important.
Uh-huh.
You know, but then it becomes subjective. A lot of African coffees are very, you know, a higher price than some of the Central or South American coffees.
How much coffee does Dunkin' Donuts reject over what you're tasting?
Oh, you know, it will vary depending on the crop year. But I would say a good number to use is probably about 25% of the coffees are rejected that doesn't meet Dunkin' Donuts standards.
And
that's rejected before it ever gets to the stores.
Well, okay.
Right, of course.
That's a lot of coffee. Now, just one last question that I have to ask. How do you feel about coffee beans that have actually passed through an animal?
I've tried that coffee.
Because I'm not real keen on that, I got to tell you.
The whole, I guess, theory in that is how they ferment the coffee.
Will you guys explain what's going on? Because I can't. I know what's going on, but
Ellen, this is all you. Go for
it. I can't even talk about it. Go ahead, Ellen. Tell people what people are talking about. And Dunkin' Donuts doesn't do this, everybody.
We don't buy these coffees.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's a specialty coffee out there that instead of fermenting coffee, which is typically fermented, when it's still the bean, which is actually the seed of a cherry,
mm-hmm.
is fermented by going in this big fermentation tank with water. And it's a time, you know, time standard depending on the
favorite
type of
method.
Coffee.
My favorite method of fermenting coffee.
There you go. That's what most people do. But there is this type of fermentation that an animal actually eats the coffee cherry.
Yeah.
And when it is
passed through,
they'll take the coffee at that point.
What if somebody's harvesting this? Come on.
I haven't actually seen that process. I've just heard about
good,
it.
Good
I have tried the coffee.
How is
and,
it?
And it's, the coffee's good coffee.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know that it went through that method.
But now, what's that coffee called? What is that type of coffee called?
You know what? That's a good question. I don't remember the name off the top of my head.
Neither do I. We're going to look that up again and stick it on the website. I've tried to put it out of my mind.
Mountain goats. I'm out.
Well, we're more all for the traditional way that you do it, and we congratulate you on still being small, medium, and large, rather than some silly names. And we hope that you will keep looking into it. We're going to try and drive consumer demand more and more toward you guys putting your great coffee in recyclable cups. That would be great.
Okay.
All right. Hey, thanks for taking the time to talk with us, Ellen.
Ellen Rogers, Chief Executive of Coffee Creations at Dunkin' Donuts. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Hey, you're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. You're back with The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, on The Restaurant Guys radio show. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
Our guest today was Ellen Rogers. She was the chief executive of Coffee Creations at Dunkin' Donuts, and I think we had a great interview. I don't know that she liked the cup question so much.
sometimes you gotta ask those questions.
We're trying
to change the world one little coffee cup at a time.
And
you know that?
You know what? And I go to Dunkin' Donuts. Mm-hmm. I do. But I'm gonna get one of those non-disposable cups.
Yep.
One of the things they also don't do at Dunkin' Donuts, a lot of these other places, they'll give you a discount if you use the reusable cup.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it strikes me that they're thinking about it. What it's going to take for Dunkin' Donuts to change is people like us who are their customers.
She said it loud and clear. You need to tell them that you would prefer paper cups. And if enough people tell them that, they'll change.
Exactly.
She made it perfectly clear that it's the customer that's gonna make that change.
And frankly, Mark and I are their customers. Mm-hmm. I mean, I buy coffee from a lot of different places. I'm actually a coffeeholic.
So there's cool stuff about coffee out there.
Yeah, I hear
some
that
really good news.
I hear that it's good for you.
Yeah. There's an article that came out this past December. Coffee reduces alcohol liver damage.
Caffeinated coffee.
Coffee and tea may reduce the risk of serious liver damage in people who drink alcohol too much, are overweight, or have too much iron in their blood.
I don't know about the iron in their blood, but...
Good news, Francis.
Good overweight news. For you, alcoholic for me.
Good news for you and me, pal. Lots of coffee, lots of tea. Both are things we drink a lot of.
Here's one final thing I want to say. Everything in moderation. which is great. And all you people have been drinking decaf all these years. To you, just along with all you margarine eaters and
you
skim milk drinkers,
and egg beaters eaters.
You people have lost all those wonderful experiences you could have had at dinner and didn't do yourself any good.
I don't want to say it's funny, but I think that it's really ironic that butter's better than margarine. That whole milk is better for you than skim milk. That caffeinated coffee is better for you than non-caffeinated.
It's like
coffee.
Sleeper.
And may actually, I mean, there are more and more studies on coffee. Coffee may actually, the antioxidants in coffee and tea may actually be doing so much good for people, and people who are drinking more than 3 cups a day may actually have more benefits than people who aren't drinking any at all, and I think it's really ironic.
I think it's hysterical. I'd like to quote Captain Sir Richard Francis Burton, who was a great explorer from the Victorian times, who, when questioned about what he drinks when in the jungle, he said, "Water drinkers die first."
It is.
That's what he said. He used to put a little scotch in the water and everything was okay. I hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to the Restaurant Guys and talking about all things coffee. Check our website and we'll tell you how to get in touch with Dunkin' Donuts and tell them that you want them to switch with paper cups. I am Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascoe.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.